6:28. I am Carol Taylor, Vice Chair. I do not have a roster, but I'm going to go through the list of what I know. Sandra Hungate is not here. She is absent, excused. Rhett Lindberg.
Here.
William Oglesby.
Here.
Jen Rylander.
Here.
Lori. I'm horrible with names, so last name. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Rodriguez and Robert Couch.
Yeah.
Right, okay, is there anyone else missing then? Okay, we didn't add anybody while I was gone, so okay. Okay, did everyone have a chance to either review the minutes recorded if they weren't in attendance or have any questions or concerns about the minutes from the last meeting on May? Okay, I would accept the motion that they be accepted as recorded.
I make a motion that we accept the meetings as they are.
Second.
I should.
Lori seconds.
Yeah.
Rebecca has made a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. I did have a chance to also listen to them, so there is no public here today, so we will move on to the next order of board business is bylaws, board member selection process.
Okay, so over the last couple of meetings, we discussed having kind of a work session to discuss the need, whether the need is there or not. So now that kind of it seems like vacations and everything are over, perhaps we can, I just like to kind of reignite that and let's schedule that work session. So, I mean, there's still a lot to discuss in relation to whether or not we even change the process, change the bylaws or anything, but it'll be good to go through it. So I'd love some feedback. I mean, I'm sure no one have, you know, not everybody has their calendar here, but do you think aiming for September might be, and are we having a meeting in September? Are we kind of like, since we missed in July, now we're doing August, are we?
I think we should stick with September just to make
That's our schedule.
Yeah, so Yeah. So do you think that it would be appropriate for us to, what does everyone's September look like? You know,
I'm out of town the 2 weeks in the middle.
And I have that surgery, in September. Okay, so October, should we aim for October?
Yes, I suppose. I mean, if we're not so available.
Okay.
Anybody?
I suggest we make a question. Pose a question. Like, I propose that we have a meeting that we schedule in October to address and specifically state what you want to do. So we can second it.
Oh, good enough. Yeah.
So
I didn't expect that we needed to vote since we already kind of voted on it before.
Well, so it was just basically say that we're pushing out tabling it until October.
Okay, good enough. So, okay.
I don't believe we need to vote unless someone has
I don't think we do.
Okay, yeah. So that's bylaws, board member selection process is being tabled to a special meeting in October.
Okay.
Clarification regarding Rhett and Robert to research.
So at the last meeting, you guys mentioned that you guys were working on a state and federal research project, and I'd just love to get some more information about that.
Is that a good start?
Whoever, yeah.
Okay. Is that okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Okay, so back to where we were 2 years ago, we were trying to see what was being done above our county to see if it would be helpful for our county. And so for I had already started a lot of informational letter writing to people in our state to find out what they were doing. And then after I started on that, Red agreed to take the state level. I agreed to look at the federal level, see if any other legislation would that is happening at those two levels, which would impact us. Referring to what we were hoping to do about encouraging better treatment animals in our county. So I did exactly what I said. I did letter writing at the state level until I released it to Rhett. And I didn't release it. He agreed to do that. And then I wrote at the federal level. And then at this point, the federal level, there is nothing going on, even a committee. But I have people who will contact me if they hear anything. And I think the letter writing has been very efficient because I can get responses back from members of Congress. And I have at the state level. So that's where I'm at. Nothing's happened at this point. It was very active right up to about April, and then it kind of took a lull.
I have a question. Is this regarding code or activities regarding animal, care?
Animal welfare.
And my second part of that is for budget.
I did not see anything related to that. The one thing that they kept getting, information on is they did adopt a national chipping of animals when you travel, like through the FAA.
Okay.
So I thought that was beneficial, but they said a lot of it was going to be happening on our state level. So I kept writing. Then I talked to Rhett, and then he was very informative to me about what he had been learning. So.
I've just been researching what's going on at state level, sort of looking at all of the above, code, funding, and other things. And they have passed several good laws this session, just relating to preventing animal abuse, making sure abusers can't live with animals. I believe they made it so circuses can't do acts with live animals. So they've made progress. I mean, not necessarily things that impact on like a larger scale, but they've done good things. I think one thing I haven't necessarily seen is more funding to kind of go with that. I think that's what really makes the difference on a larger scale. So.
That's a copy of what they produced.
Oh.
And they started enacting them as of July of this year. But there are four main pieces that I can. I don't have it here. I wasn't prepared to talk. That's the stuff that I talked to you earlier.
Now that you've gotten this, and are you kind of nationally? It sounds like you're kind of at a standstill while they.
At the national level, we're waiting.
But the state
made major progress.
Okay.
And I think William has the exact thing because I forwarded it on when I found it. And then when Rhett and I talked, he pulled up the whole bills and showed me mine was more of a summary. So William has that information. Maybe we can ask him.
I think that we should share that with the entire board. So
that would be really great.
They
would be really
changed
helpful.
And if it triggers anything for anybody on any of the other committees.
And I think it started when I was starting to try to write everybody about the dog fighting rings in Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
Back when I first joined the board 3 years ago, three or four, I forget the number of years now. And I just kept writing and keep going. And it got past 99%, right? I believe it was. So if you want to summarize anything, I'd
suggest. My email is not working at the moment for whatever reason. But as soon as I get that, I'll forward over. His email that he sent me to everybody.
Okay.
So you can see the progress.
That's great.
Yeah. There's a new proposal as well around the Gambling Commission being able to address animal cruelty as they're investigating gambling related animal fighting rings.
Did they reach out to
fighting
for input? Okay, I got the same thing.
Yeah.
Does that affect horse racing? There's only a limited amount of horse racing left in.
If it's illegal, then yes. But if it's legal horse racing,
it's regarding being illegal aspect. Okay.
Yes. So it would allow them to essentially be able to operate in an animal control capacity to go in and investigate and address instead of having to just know about it but wait for all the red tape to be able to step in.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
So.
I can read to you a little bit about what Rhett gave me.
This is
the copy you gave me. It says a person commits the crime of animal fighting if the person knowingly or does any of the following causes a minor to do any of the following, or aides of Beth's any of the following. Owns, possesses, keeps, breeds, trains, buys, sells, or advertises or offers for sale any animal with the intent that the animal should be engaged in exhibition of fighting with another animal.
Okay. And how does that affect bait dogs?
Promotes, organizes, conducts, participates in spectator of or advertises, prepares, performs any service in the furtherance of animal fighting. So,
okay, if you're using,
so that's under the category. Okay. That's RCW.
Because the thing is, she would never have been out in public that she was used as a bait dog to teach.
So it describes every behavior related to animal fighting, from going to it, transporting to it,
just talking about attendance.
Being in attendance, communicating about it. It all comes under that law. And
you have the law.
Yeah, it's RCW 16.52.117.
Is that part of what you, that one's going to...
Wynn has that,
okay.
I believe.
Okay, so perfect. So that's it. Okay.
But I wanted you to get an idea. Okay. I've been working on this for 3 years, okay, and they almost unanimously voted. I don't remember, there might have been an abstention, but did you know, it was almost unanimous.
Yeah, I think most of this built.
Okay.
And the other three items were helped us in our county in a way, so Well, you'll be able to see that.
Okay.
But it's so new. It just is out in the last month. So
it's not really implemented totally.
It's part of law. So
the law. Okay.
Okay. So it is now law.
Okay.
So that's really good news. I mean, that's what I've been working from the very beginning.
So is it kind of part of a code committee that you guys are under? Does it make sense?
It applies to our county to see how it adapts to what we have written.
Right, but I'm saying, like, is there potentially an avenue to create a third committee within the advisory board that would kind of encapsulate the state and federal review, or do you feel like it would naturally fall under the code committee?
I think it would naturally fall under code if it's being enacted into law.
Right, because what we have to do at this point, since it's now enacted, so look at our code, and I know William probably already has looked at it because he's running the show, but to see what we have that's obsolete so we can make those recommendations for changes.
Okay.
Anyway, I was very proud of that. They're probably really tired of me writing them letters and calling. I've 3 years, and I sometimes 10 or 12 calls or 10 or 12 emails, you know, per person, because the more people... They all told me the same thing. I recommend that when you want legislation, you do this. I learned this from my family, who does it national level quite a bit. Every person who has a chance to have a vote, they may not really care that you contact them, but eventually when it comes to their desk to make a decision, they go, you know, I remember that. Somebody wrote me a letter about this. And it's that greasy wheel that keeps them aware of what we're hoping for. And mine, I started off with dog fighting. That's why I got on the board. I feel it's a total success for our county and our states.
Any other discussion questions? Okay, we're going to move on to the next item, the Friends of Clark County Animals.
Okay, so for the Friends of group last meeting, okay, so I just want to get some clarity on a few things. So the idea of the Friends of group stirred out of this board. Kind of evolved out of that. It got formed. It was agreed by the board that we would have kind of a gathering, right? Mm-hmm. That we had at the library where all of the Friends of people and the advisory board came together and just got to know each other, talked about things to do. There was a follow-up email that was sent out of like outlining everything we discussed. And then at the following meeting, I felt it was appropriate to kind of like on the record, right? Because we had discussed the Friends Up group on the record. And, you know, people do listen and wanted to make sure that that was kind of a closed loop. Mm-hmm. But it did come up at the last meeting that this was not the venue to discuss anything about the Friends Up group. Mm-hmm. That was not an official vote. And I feel like it either needs to be or it needs further discussion. Because here's the thing is that the path that we took with that information sharing seemed absolutely appropriate. And the fact that the Friends of group sort of stirred out of the ideas within this board, yeah. It seemed appropriate to discuss those things at the meeting. But that was not, I believe Robert was the one who broached the subject and Donna concurred.
Yeah.
So moving forward, I think that probably the best thing is that the Friends of group basically interfaces directly with William. And if there's mm-hmm. any appropriate time or anything that makes sense to bring to the advisory board, then they can do
maybe
it.
Maybe it's just an update on what you guys are doing and not really for input.
See, that's a thing I think I didn't understand when they said they didn't think it was the appropriate venue. I mean, I thought what we were going to do with Friends of group was just come here, give a summary of what we were working on, and that's it.
Yeah.
But
that was not the appropriate venue to bring
it up. I didn't totally interpret it that way, that I didn't. I mean,
but that's what we were doing last meeting. We were summarizing what we've been working on.
Okay.
So.
Okay, well, and then Donna's not here to counterbalance her interpretation was of why. So I can't.
I had talked to her and no reason. I think having a support group is awesome.
Yeah.
I commend anybody who does it. But I recommended to Rebecca 2 years ago. The problem is that there are multiple nonprofits that exist in any political area, county, city, state, whatever. And it is not our board's business because any nonprofit or individual can donate money. But they can contact William, for example, or even our board and say, we would like to do a fundraiser for you. We would like to donate funds to you. I donate individually. I've donated this year, okay, through William. The point is the avenue is every individual or every individual nonprofit is treated the same way. It's non-governmental. And that's why I said it wasn't the part of the board's business, but we highly hope that it can be successful.
Well, and I'm just going to give you my interpretation. It isn't really the board's business because they are a nonprofit, but much as the Humane Society is a separate nonprofit, and there are many nonprofits in Clark County that are animal related, this one specifically deals with the animal control aspect and was born out of this board. I mean, it's nice to hear, they donated $500 this month to animal control and they secured leashes for, and that kind of thing. I don't think that they're going to bring their, I'm not looking for a full meeting summary. I'm just saying that just the highlights.
There's nothing wrong with sharing. I'm a full favorite. There's the organization we talked about more recently, another organization. If they want to come to the county and sit here and go, I'd like to share with what we're doing.
Yeah.
I want to hear what they're doing because it informs us to how we can better run our board and make our decision.
Okay.
But there's a distinct line of difference, as William and Donna said. Yeah.
Well, and I agree that they're going to go directly. They're not going to come to us to ask or what we need or et cetera, they're going directly to animal control.
That wasn't the point for them to come to us. The point was just to summarize what we've been working on.
Okay. There's no problem with sharing.
Yeah, that's fine.
We have people come to our, in the past, not in the last year, but in the past we've had people come and say, I'd like to, and it's an open forum for the public. So I don't see any problem with that.
Okay.
Is that answer your question?
Well, so you're reversing course and saying this is the appropriate venue then to give summaries from time to time?
It's sharing with the board what you're doing in the community. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's no different than Jen giving us steps.
Or furry friends coming and saying, hey, this is what we want. Or we have
difference being is we have a contract with some groups and we don't have a contract with every nonprofit in Clark County.
But I think that we've talked to, I know that I have talked to someone on the Executive Press Council about talking to us about what they would like to see the animal control happen and everything. that doesn't mean they've shown up, but if they do, I would expect to be with hear about their horse rescue part and the other stuff. Same is true for any of the other livestock groups or poultry or whatever. Does that sound reasonable then?
Yeah, and I also think it's reasonable to say that if the advisory board meets with any nonprofit to discuss how can we help you, then giving a review of what was stated in that meeting, mm-hmm. it's not a public meeting,
yeah.
on record, I think is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
so coming to the public forum.
Yes, yeah. I think it's okay, okay because if you as an advisory board are meeting with Friends of Group or Humane Society or Furry Friends or Orphan Humane, it really doesn't matter who it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you as a group are meeting with them to discuss how can we further the quality of life for the animals in the mm-hmm. community, then coming back to this forum and this public meeting and saying, we went to this meeting, just talked to this group, mm-hmm. and these are the highlights of what we discussed.
Okay. So just the highlights.
I think that's appropriate.
Right. So
100%.
Okay.
Because
I've asked members of the horse group to come and talk to us about what they're doing and what their concerns are. And that would be the capacity that I'm saying. I'm not reversing what I'm saying. I'm saying it's in the capacity of sharing what the private or nonprofit group is doing with the board so we're more informed.
And I think that we're showing preferential treatment by because this is the public forum.
And if you're the only group, that was the only group, not saying you were, if the Friends of Group is the only one that chooses to come and share what they're doing, more power to you.
Yep. So this is, I mean, it sounds like, summarizing what was just said, it sounds like that this public forum is the appropriate place to share the highlights of what you're doing.
Sounds good.
Okay. Moving on. Humane Society website and complaint clarification.
Okay, so I got an email. Someone reached out to me about a couple of things on the HSSW website. Mm-hmm. They were first seeking, like, how do we apply for the grant that the advisory board gives out? And I'm like, what? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So on your website, mm-hmm. on the, let's see, where is it? It's on the funders, donors page,
okay.
under the foundations.
Mm-hmm.
The advisory board is listed as a grant giver to the Humane Society.
Oh.
Right?
Whoops.
So I was finest. It refers to, now I know that the county gave a grant to the Humane Society, I think in 2008.
Okay.
It was like a spay neuter grant for like a few grand
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
So that I was like,
could be why.
Right, yeah. exactly. Yeah. So I was like, maybe they put that was just sort of like they put the advisory board instead of the county because
yeah.
the county gave it. Animal Control gave the grant, it wasn't the advisory board
yeah.
because. This person was looking, asking me, like, how do I apply for the grant?
Mm-hmm.
There's a, you guys are
okay.
a grant giver. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we're not a grant giver. I'm like, am I
yeah.
missing something?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's something that you would want to address or not, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just.
Or is there someone we should contact
yeah.
directly
yeah.
to say, hey, this is out there. Is this cool? You know, is
yeah.
this the case?
So, historically speaking, we did give grants and the advisory board was in charge of monitoring that granting
okay.
process, collecting the statistics,
okay.
deciding who gets the grant, that kind of thing. And at some point, the county stopped having money to give out for spay-neuter grants.
Yeah.
And I don't know when that was. And so to me, that's just a historical reference that's
yeah.
on our website that hasn't changed. It doesn't make it wrong and it doesn't make
yeah.
it right. It's just a historical reference.
Okay.
You know, and I think it's probably good to leave it there because the the coding and everything is still in place to where if there was money available, we could go back to that.
Oh, okay. Well, is there a way to, like, change it to the county or animal control?
No, because it came from the advisory.
Oh, it did?
Yes.
Okay.
So they are
approved. Okay, so that makes sense.
Yes. Oh, yes. So the advisory board would have approved that expenditure, and then that would have gone to whoever was in my position, and then whoever was to Donna in that position. And then up the line to cut the check and send it out.
Okay, so the mechanism is still in place to get the grants, but there really isn't an
grant.
There's no money.
It's good to have the mechanism stay in place.
Because maybe next year.
Hopefully somewhere in the future, that will be a reality again.
Okay. That's a good background. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good to know. Yes, maybe the
I didn't even know that we do stuff like that.
Yeah, I forget where I found that information, but
okay,
it was kind of exciting when I got it. The people that got serviced.
Yeah.
Or their pets.
Okay, so there's a complaint clarification that I would like to address for the record.
Okay.
At the last meeting, Robert implied that I have damaged the relationship between the advisory board and Humane Society because I filed a complaint against them and they now don't want to talk to us. Okay, so I would like to, for the record, again, to address the only two things that could be construed as a complaint that I initiated. The first was prior to the start the negotiations for the contract. And I was doing introductions, just kind of reaching out, meeting with council members to say, hey, like, we have us in terribly good about keeping you guys in the loop, but we're going to do better. The contract came up and the chair of the county council asked how that was going. And I said I had questions and that I had forwarded those questions over to the Humane Society. And the chair said, have you gotten your answers? And I said, not yet. I mean, it hadn't been that long, so I hadn't expected the answers. And he said, if you do not get the answers to your questions, I want you to inform the entire council. I want to make sure you loop in the managers. I want everybody looped in. And that's what I did. I did not get the answers to my questions, and I did as I was instructed.
Okay, so I'd like to...
I'm not done.
Okay. I don't mind waiting.
So the second instance that it was an absolute direct complaint that I initiated as a taxpayer in this community, and it was delivered at the county council meeting publicly for everyone to hear and listen to if they want to. And it was my disappointment with the cost of the contract, the lack of transparency in the contract, all types of things that I had an issue with, and particularly the clause that required the county to not share information. And at the end of the day, obviously, there is no other option, so the county has to do what they have to do. But I exercised my right as a taxpayer, as a citizen of this county, to voice how my dollars are spent. So I make no apologies for it. I will do it again, and I will continue to scrutinize any and all organizations that get county money. So that's it.
Yeah, so in response, I received the email. Well, we'll go back. I was not acting chair at the time when she got the permission to go be a person to go talk to the county council as a meet and greet is what she was given permission to do, and go to the Clark Humane Society as a meet and greet. All right. She identified herself as a board member and did the meet and greet. And then when she was not happy with how her interaction was with them, she emailed our board and said that she took off her board hat and filed a complaint as a citizen, which I feel is misrepresentation, is why I said that. But at the time, I believe you were acting on the permission of the board, and then you went too far by saying, I didn't get what I wanted as a meet and greet person to open dialogue. And then you went to the county and you said in an email that you filed a complaint as a private citizen. Great excuse. But you went there as a board member, and that's why I was unhappy with your performance there. You've been doing great since then. I have no complaint about that. But you don't go and identify yourself as a board member, and then when you don't get what you want, take off
what
your hat.
What did you get?
I don't know because I never did.
The disparaging part of saying this is what she intended to do, because we don't know the intent. And secondly, if she clearly said as a taxpayer, you know, we are representatives of the board, but we all are also private citizens here. And
I can only go by what she wrote to me.
Yeah.
And what she wrote to me is they wouldn't answer her calls.
Yeah.
They wouldn't get back to her. And she filed a complaint as a citizen, although she was interacting with them. If it's over, it's over. I'm fine with that. I want a good relationship with the agency. Okay. I didn't feel it was going well to the point where they wouldn't return her calls.
Okay.
As a board member, that damages our board's relationship. But if it's been made better by that point, I'm okay with that. I was just informing you that I was not happy. Did you file a complaint as a citizen? Great.
Yeah.
But don't go there and identify yourself as our board member, and then when it doesn't go the way you'd hope. So
I'm confused because she did not identify herself as a citizen.
I think that it's going to be
well, and also Robert, you're saying that you're fine with it now, but you brought it up at the very last meeting.
And if you think you have a good relationship with the board now. With the Humane Society?
No, okay. I'm not pursuing one.
Okay, so our goal for you to go to the Humane Society, and this is what her task was, to do a meet and greet because we wanted to improve our relationship. And all of the information I'm talking about is what she provided me through email.
Okay,
so
that's in the past.
This contract's
been signed.
It's been signed.
We are...
And hopefully that we can start with a new... a new beginning with Humane Society. Hopefully it goes better.
It's Rebecca's right to question how we're spending our dollars. It doesn't mean that we have to like how she does it, what she does.
That's correct.
But as a citizen, yes, she has that right, as does any other citizen. I mean, I'm sure you get lots of people.
But the issue is whether she damaged the relationship with the Humane Society. And she openly said,
I don't think that damaged my relationship with
the Humane Society. As acting chair, they contacted me and said, did this person have the authority of the board to do this line of questioning? Okay. And I said, no, she had a meet and greet agenda.
Okay.
And that's it. If we can move on, I'm happy with that.
Okay.
It did damage our relationship with the Humane Society at one point. And I felt that it should have been handled a lot better.
Okay. I have a whole different opinion on this whole thing, but I think we're done talking about what's in the past. It has to stop at some point because we can't go forward. We can't repair any damage that you say exists if we can't stop talking.
But I didn't say it existed. She told us that she didn't, they wouldn't respond to her. That's really bad when we have a big relationship with the county. I'm not continuing it. I didn't bring it up today. I'd already let it go.
Okay.
As long as the contract's gone forward, we can move forward.
Well, you don't get to like drop things, innuendos and insinuations out there and not expect a response. And that's what I'm doing right now.
I can go back to everything you
bring up. It's not, and that's what I'm responding to.
Okay. We're going to stop.
Stop.
All discussion about any
point of order. Question.
Point of order.
Point of order.
Is there a motion on the floor?
No, there's no motion, but the point of order is she brought up a complaint to me that I said something. I responded to it. It's done.
You're done.
Right. Unless she has something further to say, that means it's done.
She's not talking.
Thank you.
Done.
Thank you.
Stop. I'm just going to say as vice chair that this will not be discussed again. And if it is brought up again without any new information or new activity, that it will not go forward. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, discuss need for a county shelter.
Okay. So I think we're all aware that the county council was like a little sticker shock by the cost of the contract. In the recommendation that we sent over, we indicated that they, you know, review other things and, you know, explore other options. William is needing to execute, like, the beginning of his five-year plan, which is probably going to have some type of a three-year little milestone in there because the contract's going to expire. And I, you know, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that just like with every contract, when it comes up for renewal, there is a rate hike, right? There's an increase. What I like to discuss, and I'd love to hear everybody else's thoughts, of does everyone or anyone feel that there is a need for a county shelter? And what, and is that something, William, that you would like us to participate in formulating anything? Like, is there any, it's, you know, I'd love feedback from everybody and your thoughts. Because I'm worried that we're going to get to the three-year mark and we're going to have, like, kind of the same repeat of everything again. And I think we could avoid it if we're just smart about it and proactive.
Well, I have a question. How did it come to be that we no longer have? We had a shelter on Francis Lane down.
That was the Humane Society for Southwest.
Oh, that was the Humane Society.
Yeah, they were called Vancouver Humane Society.
Yeah, Vancouver.
So it was run by, okay.
It's always been a nonprofit.
It's always been through the nonprofit.
I would highly suggest, if you haven't already, to do some research about Multnomah County. The struggles and the difficulties of running a county shelter and what the cost of building a county shelter is in 2025, 2026, 2027, because costs do go up, and that's just what it is, regardless of what product we're talking about. And then what costs to operate a county shelter, because you have to pay county wages. And I think it's a lot to consider.
Well, and the second, the follow-up to that is, what other counties are doing it the same way we're doing? Are they all, do they all own that in Washington State? Do they have their own shelters?
You know,
it depends on the location.
Most of them do, okay.
Other county agencies,
okay.
You know, they partner with, like, it would be similar, like, if we had a county shelter here, and maybe Skamania didn't, so maybe we would do some sort of joint process where, you know, it could be both of our shelter where they take on part of the cost. So there are counties within Washington that do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, we are the only county in Washington that does it this way.
I have a question. It seems to me to the propose a county shelter is a remedy that we as a board should look at what we're trying to accomplish, which that remedy might work, but what is the spell out what we're trying to to accomplish, and then see what remedies go to addressing the issue that we're trying to address versus just saying, here's a remedy, I want to go in this direction. Does that make sense?
Obviously, you have to research everything.
Correct.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to look at what other counties are doing and if it's different than what we do. Mm-hmm.
Spokane is similar in size to Clark County. They actually have three shelters over there. They have one county shelter, and then they have two kind of Humane Society shelters over there.
But I am aware of the Bonnie Hayes shelter, that one that's run by Multnomah County.
No,
Bonnie Hayes is Washington.
Yeah.
Because that one's had a lot of struggles.
They have just shut down.
Did they really?
2 days a week. They're not open 5 days a week. They're not open on the weekends for their community. So county shelters are struggling. They're expensive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure saying you shouldn't look into it. You should absolutely always do your research. My experience of 15 years in animal welfare is county shelters struggle for a variety of reasons.
Yes. Now, there's ways to, like, sometimes county shelters will contract with a nonprofit, almost like the reverse of what's happening now, where the county contracts with the Humane Society to house stray animals in your facility. Sometimes a county will have a shelter, and then they contract with a nonprofit to run it. But they control the real estate, so they can never be sort of like, they can never be kicked out. You know, they can never be without a place for the animals to land. Right. And I would say, like, the biggest thing that I feel is a huge impact for us here is that we do not have an open admission shelter. Is that that's like, I know that that's a kind of a gray area, but it's really important, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's one of the things that is really hammering away at the stray population. I love that you guys are doing your spay-neuter clinic, the low-cost spay-neuter clinic, because I think that's going to make a huge impact. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to have a huge impact. Mm-hmm. But we've still got some other pieces that are missing in our community.
So I would suggest that we set up a committee of people that are interested in researching this and seeing if it's even a viable option. And what, and like, as Robert said, what needs would this solve at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
And look at the whole big picture.
Because it is a remedy to whatever is pointed out as a need.
Yeah.
So what is the need first? We need to specify that. We need to research that. And then see how other groups may have addressed it.
Well, and maybe it is purely a financial need, but then you have to look at the cost of what is it to build a shelter and run a shelter.
Right.
And the and how long will it take to recover?
Yeah.
You know, the funds. So.
And who's going to garner those funds?
Yeah. Multnomah County just got their bid back for building their new shelter, and it's $85 million.
$10 million per year to maintain, fund the employees, this materials. It's an enormous amount.
Can we speak to your comment about open admissions? And I would like to say that realistically, I don't think there is an open admission shelter across the nation, specifically because you can't be open admission because you don't have capacity to take in every animal that comes to your door.
But you,
it's all about deferring and supporting. You know, what you take in the animals that absolutely need you, right? But are there animals that you can help support in another manner to keep them out of the shelter? Because you only have several animals. I don't think it's how many animals you have.
I was just going to say, the point is, though, that people who cannot keep their
animals.
Point
of order. Can we have one person talk? Because I want to hear what you have to say. And I'm going to hear what he has to say.
Sorry.
We were having a second.
Apologize.
You know, you have someone who goes to home to home, hand adopt the animal, right?
Yeah.
They come to you, you say, no, we can't take any animals in. What do you think the people do with their dog or cat?
Yeah, I hear you.
And that's, then it becomes
a society problem. That's a community problem.
But that comes
back to the whole.
Well, it's a community problem. It's us too.
It is a community problem. But the way I see it in our community is you guys are the leader.
Yeah.
Right? You say it all. It's all over your website. Everybody knows that you are like the premier main organization in this county. So if you're sort of like the keeper of the message, the keeper of the solutions, the sort of the champion, the person out in front.
Yeah.
If you're that and there's a problem in the community, then that is your problem. Because that's a problem that you said we're here for the animals.
Yeah,
at least that's what it used to be.
We're here to help, right? But those aren't our problems. We're here to give resources where we're able and to support in all the ways that we're able. But that person owns that animal. They chose to own that animal. And we're here. We're here to say, hey, we'd love to go through this process with you because sitting in a kennel in an animal shelter is not the best place for anything.
So what happens when you give an animal to someone and they want to bring it back and you won't take it?
We do. We will take it back. Absolutely. We also actually support them rehoming it on their own because going from one home to another is best case scenario.
Okay, so I personally interface with people who have not had the experience you just explained. Mm-hmm. They adopted an animal from you. Few months down the road, it's not working. They try to bring it back and they're told no. They're given all these little hurdles that they have to get over. And so they start looking to other groups to try to rehome an animal that you put into our community.
Yeah.
You put the animal into the community. No one else did.
Can you
get to a point where the Humane Society, you know, your return policy is 30 days. And mind you, I know that that's kind of standard.
Yeah.
But it's like there are things that are missing that then when they trickle down, they hit animal control. Because if somebody doesn't have a way, like, oh, my father passed away and I need to rehome this thing or this deal, and they can't get any support, it's just like when we first met, I asked you, what do you think happens to the animals that are turned away? And you said, I don't know, maybe ending up in Harris Springs.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that the thing is that you came to me as an advisory board member to have that conversation, and you took those words out of context and used them in your personal
context. That was exactly what you said.
Rebecca, what are you looking to accomplish with this?
All I want to know is if there is any interest. Any interest from William, any members of the advisory board to promote, to research. Again, we would need to research. We would have to look at the pieces that are missing and see if there's other ways to solve them or not. It would be great if there were other ways to solve them that weren't so expensive.
Did you want to put it forward?
I can make a comment to help.
Okay.
Part of the research I've been doing is trying to find animal control groups and humane societies that have become self-funding, and I think I presented that in the past, so that they're no longer actively searching for funds, they'd be able to do it. That was one avenue that we've already tried to approach this. So there is an interest in finding out which groups have been able to self-fund some of the humane society in that community, or the animal control and county in that community have been able to reach self-funding level. I only found two. I think I shared it with everybody, right? The other question is we need to specifically focus our discussion towards what we would like to try to approach. Because I'm more than willing to try to help. And I know Rhett likes to research too. What do you want us to try to research so we can help? And I also wouldn't mind hearing you wanted to add on before, and I'd love to hear that too. Does that focus us a little bit?
I think so. I think from my perspective in my 30 or so years working in animal welfare and veterinary medicine, I feel like we are a little bit behind the eight ball with the way that we are set up, and it's created a community deficiency, and I'm not pointing fingers at it at all. I think that there's just a deficiency that needs to be addressed, you know, and part of addressing that is a lot of what you all have discussed, but part of addressing that is, can Clark County grow up to be where it should be with reference to staffing in a department like mine to better serve the community? Because if we are looking at, do we get a Clark County animal shelter, then what that also means is increased staffing levels in the department that I currently manage. Ideally, that would increase our officers on the streets. And then we would look at, you know, you have the same type of staffing that they have at their shelter. You know, maybe there's not a veterinary component. Maybe there is. That's something that can be done in a different way if necessary. So I think looking at this larger picture of how do we better serve the community? How do we better serve the people in need? How do we better serve the animals in this community? And how do we create better instances of quality of life or both, you know? And does that mean we build a whole new shelter? Does that mean we find other avenues? And that's what this kind of discussion needs to look like, you know?
So you feel that it would be beneficial then if we did that?
I know that you've got to do that.
You know, I keep thinking of like the 5-year plan that you're supposed to do, and I'm like,
And I think that, you know, if we're looking at this, you know, if we look at 2 or 3 years down the road, what does that look like? Have we been able to flesh this out and say definitively, yes, the county needs a new shelter. Yes, the county needs to put more money into this department to make it a full-fledged animal services agency. Or does that mean in 2 or 3 years we find that there are other alternatives that can be implemented within the county, whether it's through animal control or through other service agencies to help solve the problem, you know? But I think looking at all of it is very important, you know? And you're right, county agencies with shelters struggle. And that is just a reality of the world we live in, unfortunately. And the reason they struggle is most of the time when you're looking at animal control or animal services, whatever that name is, that department is the lowest on the totem pole with reference to funding. Because in counties that are financially hurting, they're going to put more money into health and human services, they're going to put more money into public works, they're going to put more money into these greater county needs. And then what happens? And more of the visible needs, yeah. And so animal control gets what's left.
Yeah.
And that happens in county, every county across this nation for the most part.
And to add on to you, back to what I had said in previous meetings, what I found all across the country was that was the truth, that the government facilities tended to fail, that the real success came from creating the enforcement at the animal control level to and the licensing of animals, which created the funding. And then they were able to fund the nonprofit like humane societies to expand their facility to encompass all the needs that you're suggesting. That was the way that was successful. I didn't find anyone that had gone a different route.
No, and like Maricopa County in Arizona, back in the early 2000s, when I was working with them, they were almost financially independent through licensing.
Okay.
But you're looking at one of the largest growing counties in the country.
Yeah.
That, you know, so you've got a lot more money and people in that county to be able to make that a really good push.
Yeah.
You know, counties about our size, it's hit and miss.
Yeah.
You know, people may want to license their animals, whether they care about it or not, is unknown. You know, and some people, like when we were at the walk, and people would come by and be like, oh, God, I got to check out my license. I don't even know if it's valid anymore, you know? And so then, you know, we have that conversation and the reminder of, well, it is annual. And, you know, we do send out reminders in your, to your mail. Oh, I moved. I forgot to change my address. You know, little things like that, you know? I mean, we all know that as we move forward in life, we forget things, you know? And not many people think about, did I move Rudy's tag over to where it needs to be?
I don't even remember.
I mean, they can barely remember to call the internet people to come turn on the internet and they're trying to get everything else done. So, I mean, it's understandable, you know? So, but there are no easy answers when it comes to animal sheltering, animal welfare, licensing your pets. There's nothing easy about it, you know? And we can say that these are all, you know, people problems. And to some degree, that is a true statement. Many communities are in this pet overpopulation issue because the community has stopped caring, you know?
And that goes back to our outreach committee's effort. If we can just, that's the avenue. That's what we need. And it addresses what you discussed, what I brought in the past and today again.
Yeah, so I think it's important that as an advisory board looking at what do those solutions look like in the next 2 to 3 years with an eye on a 5-year plan?
Any suggestions on how, if anyone's interested in addressing this and if it needs a special committee or just a...
This is kind of like a little side note, but is there any updates on our new board members?
Sorry, I got a very, very last minute one at like 3 o'clock right before I was leaving the office. So Michelle, who is she's kind of like Kathleen Otto's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of scared her with the additional application. I sent her and she was like, what is this for? And she like kind of panicked. And then I like had to backtrack her a little and be like, this is what, remember the email we sent you, the yada yada.
Yeah.
So, she sent a urgent email to Kathleen this afternoon. She said the latest we'll hear back is Monday.
Nice.
And then she'll be able to email out those letters.
Oh, great.
Right.
Perfect.
So Monday is the latest.
So why don't we wait till maybe the next meeting?
Next week.
The next meeting is hopefully
a month away.
Right. And there's been, you know, maybe there'll be new people that'll, you know, and then we can and we can lay out maybe what we need to do.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's a motion or not. I'd like to resuggest that the outreach committee try to work on the ideas that we found through our research actively is effective okay. around the country, and that is getting information out to people, like William was saying,
okay.
If that's possible for that committee to do.
Yeah, that is the outreach
committee. No, because the Friends of group came out of the outreach committee.
Yes,
like, that
was the new outreach committee,
okay.
yeah.
I mean, mind you, we can't, you know, Donna indicated that we can't completely just say, oh, outreach is now handled yeah. by them.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to be, I mean, I think that we need to
still
figure out if there's just to see what, you know, to see what the county needs and if there's anything left over, you know, that the advisory board would do. The whole idea with outreach and why we went down the path for the Friends of was because the advisory board can't move terribly fast when it comes to doing anything because we have so many people, even to just like, hey, could we put out a little ad that says go to this event or there's this cool thing or hey, it's hot, don't leave your dogs in the car. All that messaging has to go through like five people. And by that time, it'll be like winter.
Yeah.
So,
we haven't met that.
Yeah.
Welcome. I forgot that was.
You're welcome. What?
I said, I welcome it being winter.
Oh, you'll get the next round of people. It's cold. They left their car, their dog in the car, and it's, you know, 32 degrees.
But is it a popsicle yet?
Oh, yeah. It's water
from the exhaust. That's fine.
Whose dog is it?
Okay, so that has been tabled to the next meeting.
Next meeting until we get new board members.
To dispatch, yeah. Okay, code review.
All right, so I have worked on code review that encompasses the changes that Joel's board suggested to Donna. She sent me everything, the stuff that she had. So I narrowed it all down to this. I've given this to Donna, and she has not had time to review it and get back to me yet, but she is a busy lady.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you copies, and then I'll walk through the highlights.
Okay. Thank you.
I gotta make new options. Just fold it like an
airplane. Oh, my weapon is land on the ground.
All
right. So I flip to the next page for the back side of it. I found the front page. I'm just adding some definitions here. I am adding the definition for ADMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, because I have farther down updated the vaccine requirements for facilities, and basically it just clarifies what was already there because it was been off. So but because I'm using their standard, which most vets use, then that's why I thought there was a need to include them as a definition. And then I wanted to add community cat, what it is. Talk about a community cat program. We don't define what a community cat program community cat is, and so defining a community cat is important for that program. And also, this definition comes directly from the city of Tacoma. We just updated it. And then, so I guess I should have said this first, but I do welcome any feedback you guys want to give me on this. Just email it to me.
Okay.
And also discuss here, but I can email me also, so I can put it in.
I compliment you on using other free work done by other people, because that's the way it seems it gets passed during my tenure.
It's already there.
Yeah.
But why not really?
Yeah.
And then also with the city of Tacoma, they defined companion animal. And what I did is append this to what we already had in code as domestic animal. And the animal's physical, emotional, behavioral needs, that statement is directly from the city of Tacoma. So, for the next page 3, we're adding mobile grooming. as we have learning more and more. Yeah, we're seeing a lot more mobile groomers, and it provides clarity for the public. It's, they think, well, I don't have a grooming facility, so it's fine, but technically it isn't a facility.
The psychology group had to do something. We had to update there.
Yeah. Okay. In the next one, so livestock guardian dog, it's important that we, I think this came from you guys. I'm not sure where this came from.
It came from Rebecca Holliday, who's not, she was, I don't think that can come from anybody that's here.
Wasn't she an equine person?
Yes. I think Terry was involved in this as well, Terry.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I found the reference to guard dog, not specifically livestock guarding a dog, in that WAC code that I have mentioned there. So what I did is I took the WAC code statement, and then I added on the other stuff that had been put in the document, so that people have an understanding of the fact that they're going to bark, they're going to growl, they're going to cause a noise nuisance. And that's specifically why a livestock guardian dog is being fined. It's because of noise nuisance laws. So, because they're going to be what they are. They should be. And again, we do mobile grooming as its own statement. And then down at the bottom, we included a statement of self-groom. I don't know where that came from also. It was just on one of the documents. It made sense to me to have a definition for self-grooming in our code, so that if we need it in the future, we have it. Otherwise, it's just a known statement. Then a code reference change for service animal. And for facility licenses, records required. So in this one, this is my change. This is something I'm suggesting. Because I think if a company is dealing with animals, you know, whether it's dog, mostly dogs and cats, whether they're housing them there, holding them there, you know, whatever that process is, those animals should be fully vaccinated. You know, the people working with those animals should feel safe that they're working with these animals, knowing that they're not going to spread disease to another animal, or you know, rabies vaccines are already required by most places, so there's not that issue there. But I feel it's important that any animal-related facility with dogs and cats specifically.
But does that cover, like, boarding facilities for horses or?
No, because we don't address the business.
Okay.
It's dogs and cats.
Just dogs and cats.
Okay. Yeah. So what I did is I took out the exception portion, and then I added of all animals auctioned off, sold, let, held, housed, maintained, or otherwise disposed of, proof of vaccine required, let the code the same as it is.
Okay. A question.
Yes.
Going back to page 5, line number 10, is that signals to me that if an animal is under control verbally, like I've seen in other areas of the country or world, that means they're still under control even if they're not leashed. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's not code I'm changing.
Okay.
That's
so it stays the way it is.
Yeah. Thank the you. Only thing that's changing with that one is the number on the side changes.
Okay. Thank you.
The double underline means a change. So, yeah, that is not changing at all.
Yeah. I would. Question on page 4, line number 26.
26, yes.
Does that specifically apply to farm animals, or could someone?
You're talking about police dogs,
or just livestock?
Oh, livestock guardian. A livestock guardian.
Yeah.
So yeah, livestock guardian dogs. That's specific to dogs that go livestock. So it could be a farm. It could be, you know, a small
chicken coop.
It could be a chicken coop. You know.
Generally,
they live with those animals.
Okay. So if someone had a dog that was guarding its outdoor cat, would that fall?
No, because it's not like
it's not.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have seen dogs in dog ugly hats, though.
Yeah.
A little too well, something.
Yeah. All right. And then in section, next section, page six, I am just adding the this provision does not apply to community cats. That's reference to cat licenses, because we don't currently require licenses for community cats, but because we're suggesting a definition of community cat, it's important to show that they don't need to be licensed. Is there not?
Well, they're not. No, yeah. Yeah.
And then on page seven, under facilities and general conditions, it mentions heating, but I also added cooling, because as the summers are getting warmer here, it's important that we have that addressed in.
I believe it might be a mistake when I sent you about overall temperature.
Yes.
Pursuant to the animal, pattern animal.
Right. And then the next one is noise nuisance. I've added livestock guardian dog in there.
Twice.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I added it wherever it was already there. So I think this is the one that came from somebody else too. And then that part came from somebody else, but the part at the bottom where it says noise nuisance report should include reporting party name, phone, address, and email address to be actionable due to the need for sworn statements and evidence of violation of the state. So currently as policy, we require that. But I felt it should be strengthened and cut. So we get a lot of noise nuisance complaints that are not actionable because people don't give the right information, enough information. We have no way to follow up on that type of thing, and we do not have the manpower to go sit outside somebody's house and listen for a barking dog. Not even know. Right. Moving forward. Dog or animal, with the exception of cats, whether licensed or not, which runs at large. So let's talk about running at large and the places they run at large. I added for animal with the exception of cats because we have cows that run at large,
horses,
you know, horses that run at large, goat, pigs.
Duck,
goats. Yeah, we had 2 cows the other day.
We have chickens. We have all the turkeys. Mm-hmm. So I felt it was important for the running at large to be broader so that the officers have a little bit more ability to actually help stop the problem, which is usually through a citation if they can't get them to do it by themselves. All right, so this one, 23 or line 7, you know how you're looking at it. Suitable structures or fences shall be provided to comply, blah, blah, blah. So that statement, I ran that one by team, and they don't feel that should be included. So, but I left it in place.
Okay.
As a discussion
point. Did they say one?
And you referenced that line.
Oh, it's 23 or line 7, page 10.
So what happens if, okay. So when the pigs for years did not fix the fences because his theory was they're just going to get out. They got out all the time. And the neighbors, not that when you live in a rural area, your neighbors that close, but boy, did they destroy some gardens.
Yes, they did. But then that comes into an animal running at large causing destruction.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a whole different way to deal with
that. Well, so if it didn't cause destruction and they just rounded them up every day.
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, if they cite them for the animal running at large, it keeps getting out and it just escalates.
Okay.
So there's other
and they know
there's other ways to deal with this other than code for fence.
And they know where they need to.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
All right. So with the vaccine required, I'll read you how I reworded it so it's a little clearer. Each facility shall cause each dog and cat owned, sold, held, housed, maintained by it to receive current and proper immunization from disease from a licensed veterinarian to be reported in the form of medical records or vaccination certificates and to be stored locally in a file or software program noting a description of the animal sufficient for identification. Owner, veterinarian, vaccine type, and expiration date. Some immunizations in accordance with the American Veterinary Medical Association, AVMA, core vaccine standards of such. Sorry, I can't read anything. More coffee is needed. Such immunizations in accordance with AVMA core vaccine standards for dogs shall consist of distemper, hepatitis, or adenovirus 2, which is the same thing. Leptospirosis, parainfluenza, parvovirus, commonly referred to as DHLP. Now, I put lepto in there because we are a wet area.
Yeah.
So I felt it was important to have that in there. The officers felt I should probably take that out. So that's up for discussion in my opinion. I'd rather add more and take away than not have enough.
I would agree with that. I think that is a vaccine that's still trying to gain traction.
Agreed.
And it's not at this point considered a core vaccine.
It's not. No.
So.
And it's only considered core in really wet areas. And even then, it's kind of like the 1 year, 3 year argument with DHP.
Yeah. Yeah.
So depends on what vet you're talking to, where you're at, and whether they graduated in the last 5 years or 20 years. So, but, you know, so that's why I have leptospirosis in there. And then non-core vaccine, Bordetella. I think Bordetella should be in there for people because they take their dogs apart, they walk them around nose to nose, they do all kinds of things with their dogs, so better to have it in there than not. Immunization for cats shall consist of feline viral rhinotracheitis, Calicivirus, virus, and panleukopenia, commonly referred to as FVRCP. Additionally, rabies vaccines for dogs and cats 6 months of age or older is required, which that's already involved. Rabies tags, pet tags, and other types of identification are not sufficient to meet this requirement. This includes all facilities as defined, stated, and or noted in Title VIII code. This does not apply to veterinary facilities, hospitals, and clinics. I should probably add shelters to that too.
Yeah.
Shelters and rescues. Those are my suggestions.
So you're talking shelters and rescues too. This does not apply to them. Okay.
Because they're generally under vet care. So, and then on the next page, I just noted a quick table on vaccines. Generally, it's required is 3 vaccines spaced 3 to 4 weeks apart. It's commonly known that 8, 12, and 16 weeks is what we're going to get puppies and kittens. But if you work in rescue and or shelter medicine, it can start as early as 4 weeks. We don't have a known mom. And it can go as far as 24 weeks.
The standard right now is we'll start at 4 weeks every 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, that I don't feel like we need to put that in code.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I felt it was important to have it, give everybody an idea of what that looks like. It's not that or owned animals. Then we're updating the reference for rabies
samples. Yeah, I can adopt that skunk that's in my backyard.
Actually, you can in some places. I don't know about here, truthfully. But I know several vets who have owned skunks over the years. Very cat-like creature.
I know. Very cat-like. Very great.
Yes.
I'm sure my dogs are hungry.
But I do want you guys to look this over, give me some feedback on it. And then I'll.
You have a deadline for when you need to be back on?
I think we're doing our work group on the 26th, I think. I have to look my calendar.
It says here, date September 24th.
Oh, thank you. It's on the count. It's on the top.
It's on the top.
Okay. When Donna gets back, then I'll be able to sit down with her and get her feedback on that.
Okay.
So she'll be back, what, the second? Third?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, second or third. So if I can get it by the end of the first week of September, that'd be great.
I would say the para influenza is also not a regularly administered vaccine.
Okay.
But I can get all of them.
Yeah, just email to. Any questions? Okay.
Okay, moving on to change meeting location.
Okay, so I am suggesting that you guys change your meeting location mainly based on the fact that Donna is the only person that has access to that building.
Okay.
And like, I'm of the opinion that, yes, Donna should come to any meeting she wants to mm-hmm. and be a part of this whole process. But I don't think she should be obligated to do so because she's the only one with access to the building.
Right.
So my suggestion, first suggestion was this building here. And then if for some reason this building doesn't work, then maybe as a secondary Jensen Park meeting room. So kind of works out great that we're having the meeting here because you kind of get to see the building and, you know, see how it works for you. But these are my two suggestions. We don't have a lot of places that we can jump to. They are putting a room similar to this in our building. At some point that will be done and that will be available to us as an option also. So
I'm not opposed to changing the meeting location.
Mm-hmm. When's your completion date on the room at, near your office?
I don't know. I don't have any data on that, unfortunately. The whole building is slowly coming in. They just finished laying tile in the main lobby. So
my only regarding Luke Jensen, I have had a meeting there before and it was a soccer net. And parking can be horrible.
Yes, and I know that in there.
Week.
Well, they're playing tonight when I came by.
So you're proposing two locations here, right?
I'm proposing two locations. And I do have as one of the cons for Luke Jensen that it's a parking. It's a little crazy.
Well, I like to make a motion that we just use this facility and then reevaluate when the facility at your office is completed at that time.
Okay. Second. Seconded. Any discussion?
I agree with you about the parking there. It's very difficult, especially on certain days of the week. And
I didn't take that into consideration when I
played. And if you run late, they just shut the lights off.
Oh,
that's pitch black.
Unfortunately, that since I was a kid, though. That's how they get everybody gone.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. We'll be meeting here in the future until the further notice.
And so we know the numbers to them.
Is there anything that we need to
know what any have the common
changes that need to be initiated on the website or anything?
I ask for
permission.
Yes.
See if
they'll give us the address.
I should see if they'll give you
the
okay. It can also go on the
keybox. It can also go on the keybox, yeah. Either way, if they won't give us three, see if they'll give us one.
We were just discussing, does that need to be updated on the website and
yes,
so
okay. Taking some notes down.
Yeah. What will happen now is Jackie will reach out to guys up front and give them the calendar of dates, and then they will double check that there's no issue. And then if there's no issue, they'll plug everything in or let her know what dates can't be plugged in, and then we'll have to find space for that one.
Okay.
So, or two, or whatever it may be.
Okay.
But I don't think there's many people here this week, right? So.
I've been here before. Like, there's a parking lot for this building right here.
Oh, is that?
So you don't have to park on the other side. Pull around here, and there's a handful of spots.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. It's all wide open here.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Stats for second quarter.
All right. Numbers. Okay. So it looks like, and I don't have comparisons for last quarter in front of me. I apologize.
They're up. It's all up.
But if we're looking month to month, for all of our total calls coming in, so in April we did 1,337 calls, and we had a drop in May, 1,066, and then June we went to 1,260. So we had like a 200 call jump between May and June. But it makes sense. It's getting hotter.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a lot of sense. And then for citation issued, citations issued, we are looking at 31 in April, 16 in May, and 27 in June.
Oh, same trend.
So same trend, yep. Yep. And then licensing. So we're looking at a drop in licensing. So April was 890. And then we jumped to 1325, but you have to remember our new software started in January. And then there were some issues. We had to iron out a bunch of things. And so we didn't get a lot of renewals out when they needed to go out, so they went out late.
Okay.
So that represents a jump in our licensing. So the 890 for Guts Dogs, by the way, 1325 in May. And then 1115 in June. So we dipped a little bit again, but I would also attribute that to the notices not getting out exactly when they need to get out. I think that we are getting better with the new software and getting those out appropriately. And we'll be back with the same.
How's it going with the code change for veterinary being mandatory reporters for rabies?
So the problem with that code, it's a great code. It is a common code in many municipalities, in many counties, and it works great when you have the staffing levels to deal with those types of things. Jackie is one human being. And so right now that stuff is just chilling.
Yeah. I mean, do you have them submitting?
Yes. They submit it every month.
Good.
Yeah. It just all goes into another file.
Yeah. We don't have the manpower to deal with that on the level that we
need. So you know when the software is going to be at a point where they could become agents for you and just license there in the clinic?
Hopefully, I've got a meeting tomorrow with one of the guys at the software place to talk about that.
Yeah.
I have questions that need answers that I don't have answers to yet.
Yeah.
And it's mainly procedural, like if I set them up this way, is it going to cause problems here or here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my goal is to get as many licensing agents on board using the software because
it's devious.
It's there.
Yeah.
So I want them to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And I do want to do that some more
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that will help lessen her load.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it may also just transfer there. Load for Jackie at some level.
So a different area.
I'm ready to get rid of paper
books. The carbon copy book.
I mean, Jackie. I'm ready for
it. So do you know if everybody's
done
following the mandatory, all the vets are following the mandatory reporting?
We sent out a letter and we got a lot of feedback on that letter.
Okay.
We sent out a letter to every single veterinarian. I think, did we send one to you guys?
I don't know. Probably not because we already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyways, every veterinarian within Clark County and a couple of them outside of Clark County, Portland side that have normally been sending us information anyways, got the letter about the mandatory reporting.
Okay.
And so we had a lot of feedback from the vets, like how do we do this? What's the easiest way to do it? And some of them were like, well, can we just be a licensing agent? And the answer was yes, we're not quite there yet. So hopefully we'll get that on board. I would prefer that every veterinarian in the field be something.
That would be best case scenario.
It'd be much easier.
Yeah. From a workload.
They give them their rabies vaccine certificate. They also sell them a license and move them on.
Yep.
Well, and with so many corporate owned, with, you know, different branches, that would make it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Because get one done, you get 10 done.
Right? Yeah. And there are, up in King County, QFC sells licensing out of the customer service area of the grocery store.
Interesting.
What?
And
well, that's a Kroger, like Fred Meyer.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a Kroger store. Yeah. So I'm waiting to get a little more information on that and see if that's something we can do also.
That's interesting.
Well, if they are able to sell, like, hunting and fishing licenses, those we should be able to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
why not
be another.
In the plans, yeah. I'm for
right here. More money. They'll just raise their rates.
Yeah.
All right. So for cat licenses in April, we had 379. We get a nice increase to 469 in May. Then it dropped back down to 320. So overall, we sold 4,498 licenses combined in a period of time. So that's a pretty good number.
Are these new licenses or renewals?
Both. It's both.
Okay.
We don't break it down by
renewals or licenses. Do we have a year comparison to say last year? This is way off trend from what happened last year? Or?
We can't really do that kind of comparison just yet because of the new software implementation, the bumps and bruises along the way. You're just not going to get clean data.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't personally, since I'm always in it though.
You live.
even just this last month alone, our numbers have gone up. We're still not at our numbers for last year.
Oh. Okay.
But each month we're getting more so. Okay. And so we're kind of catching up for the year. And I think by the end of the year, it's going to be for the first time maybe a positive number.
Nice.
Fingers crossed.
Okay. So.
All right. Sheltering. We're looking at officer intake for dogs. 41 in April, 42 in May, and 65 in June.
That
dogs and cars really count.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some cases.
So total 148 dogs. We did 84 cats in April. 115 in May. 163 in June, so 362. That also includes that 50 cat case, you know, where that one passed away.
Yeah.
That includes her cats too. So that's an unusual jump for that.
Yeah. But something we've been seeing this year, an increase in large cat intakes.
Yes.
Overwhelmed properties.
Yes, overwhelmed properties.
I was saying there's been more public cases this year.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, for most of those people, they got in over their head and didn't know what to do.
That's what usually happens.
They don't know that they can reach out for help, you know.
Maybe
they reach
out
to you or somebody in your organization, but they don't reach out to us. Yeah. They don't realize that we work in concert to help solve the problem.
Yeah.
So.
And they get embarrassed.
They do.
It gets to a certain level where they're embarrassed.
Yep.
So
of my three-legged women.
How do you find out about cases that they have, you know, they've become?
Usually people complain and we go in and do a check.
Okay.
Yeah. Or sometimes the Humane Society will reach out to us and say, hey, we heard about this. Can you check on it?
We see things, we hear things.
Yeah. And it's not like we don't want to walk in and, like, get people in trouble. It's how we help you solve this problem.
Right. Yeah.
That goes back to our outreach information to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's opportunity for a ton of education.
Always at every
dusty board.
Yeah. That's the one thing in every community that's missing,
you know,
is education. And not just like
little bits of education. You need true, like, grassroots education in order for it to really take hold and happen. And most communities don't have the resources for that. You know, you can't say, well, you as a humane society should be doing all the education in the community, or us as animal control should be doing all the education in the community, or pick your smaller group along the way. You know, it's a lot of work, no matter how you look at it, no matter how you try to pitch it and send it out. It costs money. Unfortunately, it costs money. All right, so we're looking at other intakes. We had 9 in April, 3 in May, and 2 in June. 1 in 14. That might be iguanas, fish, things.
Goats, birds.
Rabbits. So we did 134 animals in April, 160 in May, and 230 in June. Total of 524 animals ordered. That's just strictly what our officers take in. So that's a horrible number.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the world we live in. But you also have to look at it from the perspective of, is it a bad number? Yes. But making a positive difference in those animals' lives is what's important. And even if that meant maybe some had to be humanely euthanized, there's so much worse in the world than human euthanasia. So, yeah, it's there. That's true. All right. Anybody have any questions?
I have two. Are largely the donations are done by individuals, or is there an organization?
So no, there's a new tab on our licensing software that says donation, a little button that people can push that and donate.
Excellent. I think that was our idea like 3 years ago.
Yeah. And it works. It just dumps into the general fund.
Yeah.
It's not a lot yet.
We're seeing a positive flow, I'm assuming, more than $10 or something.
Yeah.
The other question is the appeal hearings. It says advisory board tribunal. Can you explain?
That's me.
Is that you? That's what I thought.
Those are the ones that come across my desk, and I talk to the officer about the case, and it, like, you know, maybe somebody says, you know, I can't afford to pay $150 for that fine. You know, can you help me out? Whatever the reasons are, you know, and I'll talk to the officer about it and get their opinion on it, and then use my experience in the world and just make a choice. And I don't usually, I'll usually maybe half it, you know, or a small reduction or whatever. And sometimes if I don't have enough clarity, I'm going to call the people and talk to them about it and find out what's going on. Yeah. And that way I have a larger picture in order to make that choice.
Thank you.
Okay. One thing I do want to point out is the non-responsive or non-service calls, 1,840 non-service calls. So what that represents are calls that come in that may or may not have enough information. Okay. It also represents noise nuisance calls. So on a noise nuisance call, they're going to get an email with a letter that they share with the people whose animal is making all the noise. Give them some time to self-correct, and then they give us proof that they sent that letter, you know, and that escalates that noise nuisance, but we don't actually send officers out on the initial noise nuisance call. It's just one of those
important
color warnings.
Does that include the new information on the website that you guys updated so people can sit, read the letter and go, oh, I can go and look up information?
Everything that we send them.
Excellent.
Everything that they get in that email is actually on the website.
The website's so much better,
you know,
over the last few years.
But that's what the non-service calls are. So that represents the calls that our dispatcher takes care of. Do you take care of any of those?
No.
I didn't think so.
I just wanted to spank you.
She doesn't know. A lot.
All right. I didn't print them out, but I shared my stats via email. Does anyone have any questions about those? I do share it for all our contract agencies because I think it's a great snapshot of all the animals that are coming through the facility from all of the different jurisdictions. So, I mean, it's getting towards summertime, so up, up, up. Definitely, as the biggest jurisdiction, we get the most animals from the county. Next up is City of Vancouver. So it's definitely our top. We share intakes with West Columbia Gorge. So just kind of depends. They only have 6 dog animals. They just recently renovated, which is wonderful. So emergency boarding, those are going up. Those are animals that when someone's going through a crisis, a house fire, fleeing domestic violence, are able to house their animals for them, ideally in a foster home from anywhere from 30 to 90 days, so like kind of get back on their feet. Okay. Hopefully we can reunite them. I think we probably reunite about 80% of animals. There sometimes just comes to the point where they need to make that hard decision because they're out of options. If my family or friends, they can take them. We opened up our low-cost euthanasia services back to the community about a month or two ago, so those will likely increase. We have appointments 5 days a week right now available for the community.
What are your costs for that?
I don't know it off the top of my head.
On the website, though.
Okay, it's on the website. And then actually probably within the next 30 days, we're going to be able to lower those costs even more because with our acquisition of Longview, we acquired a crematorium. And so we are going to start utilizing that for owner request private cremation specifically, so we can lower that cost for community members. So they want to get that practice back. That's going to be kind of within their ability. Right now, it's very expensive because we have to send it out to a private company. So we're looking forward to be able to offer that. The community members. And then of course when our community clinic opens and gets up and running, that will also be another location that we can offer that local service.
So with your low cost euthanasia services, is it owner present or not?
At the community clinic it will be owner present. At the shelter it will remain not present.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Are you looking at opening another clinic or are you going
to I think we're gonna take a deep breath and just kind of wait. It's not, but I mean, you never know what will happen.
I mean, so.
But it's in a pretty central location, so yeah. I think. Just kind of see how it goes.
So what I'm hearing is running that shelter and that shelter, and doing a clinic. You all are running ragged and need to be put.
Yeah. Well, the clinic's not mine, thank goodness.
Justin probably needs a deep breath.
Oh. Gosh, strays are up. Let's see. Agency intakes were higher for the county, which is animal control bringing them in. Stray intakes, which are over the counter, where people can just bring animals in. City of Vancouver was highest for Q2. 425 from City of Vancouver versus 328
from
County.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but we're closer in, right?
In city.
Yeah. The City of Battleground just got an additional full-time animal control officer, which is wonderful. Her name is Sally. Mm-hmm. So now they have 1.5 animal control officers for the City of Battleground. So
yeah, she spent about 2 weeks with our group. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, she's been wonderful.
She's great.
So I'm really excited to see what she does in that community.
Is there animal control in Richfield also, or is that
just the three police?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And then you guys are covering the City of the Center.
Okay.
So, but Battleground's growing, so.
It is.
Yeah, I think Ridgefield is exploding.
It is too, yeah.
So.
They kind of do something eventually.
They do.
Yeah.
Well, and they are on the lifetime license for the.
Yes. Wild.
I know my son bought a house there, and can you believe it?
No.
Who does that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not fiscally sound for some communities.
Yeah.
Well, it can't be for them. Look out. I mean, their population is
exploding. That could be strictly administrative folks.
Oh, that's true, too.
Yeah.
They don't have that many employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was just the beginning of kitten season, so only about 400 kittens in Q2. So I'll be excited to share those numbers for Q3.
How much does Q do usual when you don't get like triple from what?
Oh, yeah. This year we've seen an unusual amount of disease in kittens.
Oh.
I think it's just under vaccinated. The cost of care for veterinary care is just hard. So I definitely see an increase of kittens with panda goop this year. And some of it absolutely has come from these larger cases that we've worked with animals. That many animals.
Yes, something you know.
Where do these people get these animals?
It starts out like any other. I love cats, and so I get a cat from a friend, or I get a cat from this free Craigslist post or Facebook, and then I get another cat.
And you're saving.
Yeah. And then, or just get cats. Right? I don't want cats.
I can take care of them.
You know, but I can't afford the spay neuter,
mm-hmm.
or I don't know where to get low cost, or it doesn't exist, right?
Okay.
Like, and so then now you have a kitten here and another kitten, and then you get another kitten, and none of them are spayed and neutered, and you run into friends to cat can have it's often easily four litters a year.
And get pregnant and pull them.
Yeah, and they get pregnant.
And it just multiplies, and I don't think it's not intentional. It's not these aren't bad people. These are people that love the animals that they, even when they've got 100 of them, they still love them. But at that point, you just can't care for them. And then that many animals is starting to affect the environment, right? Not just for the other animals, but also for the people, which is when things really start to kind of.
That's where we end up hoarding.
Yeah.
Well, in our, you know, you look at like every aspect of the pet arena from the pet products industry to the vet community to the nonprofit sector. Everybody's promoting and you know the dream. Like get an animal.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make your life better. They'll make you happy.
Well,
they'll be a great friend.
COVID.
Exactly. So everybody shows up for that dream. Even people who can't afford it show up for the animal. And then, you know, then you have like, let's get two. Let's see how two chickens and then poof.
Then
you have a gazillion kittens.
Yeah. The whole online pet sales. We made that.
Yeah. And like I said, I think people mean well. I do.
Yeah.
I don't.
No, I agree.
But things just get out of hand.
Well, and for dealing with the stressors of working in the welfare, you have to look at it from a perspective of they mean. Until you're proving otherwise.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the sheer number of animals that you've seen in situations that you see them in will break you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's where that community education is in, right? And like
William
said, it's not just one organization doing it, it's everyone saying, how do we tackle this together?
Well,
how do we make sure everyone has the information to give if they encounter somebody with a need?
Well, and it probably helps just even like neighbors being aware.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want cats in here.
Like today we went and set up a free wellness clinic down at the Open House Ministries, had a big block party downtown today. And we went down there. We set up our mobile clinic and we had veterinary staff and we did free no questions, wellness and vaccines and microchips for anyone that walked up because that's where the need is, you know? And so I think it's kind of doing things like that, right? Where's the next event? Where's the next whatever at a park or at a, you know, Saturday market or at a farmer's market and getting the word out.
You're seeing more homeless people with pets?
They're always, that's always, I would say more.
That's a constant.
Yeah.
Okay.
But honestly, most people who are homeless or houseless are by far good pet owners.
Mm-hmm.
You always have the outliers in that situation. But most of the time, those pets eat better than they do.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and that's usually the only thing that keeps them alive or keeps them functioning are those animals, you know. So the answer to how do you deal with that is support them the best we can.
Yeah, there's this organization called Human Animal Support Services. You can find them online. They are just a wonderful component of kind of the One Health model, where it's the community health, right? It's the people, it's the animals. How do we get everyone the mental health support and the, you know, mental health support that they need, because they're all intertwined.
Yeah. Well, I work on Walmart in Portland, and for years, and I just noticed this year, panhandling, everyone has a dog, everyone, and it used to be, every now and then you'd see a dog, you know, but now,
they just may be more visible, because they've always had them, and cats.
I'm sure, possibly.
There's a lot of houseless that have cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was surprised by that. We have a homeless guy named Brian that stops by every day, and he has a cat.
Yep.
There's a cat.
Yep.
Out in 2 years.
Yeah. And so I think there are things, good things that are also happening.
Yes.
In conjunction with that, like City of Vancouver is working on their, I can't remember what it's called at the top of my head, but they're working on their shelter that's going to be people there. That's their house.
Yeah.
And they're going to be very intentional about how they're going to build that. And that's going to look so people can bring their pet with them, because that's another challenge, is that people aren't seeking help and aren't seeking the mental health they need, support they need, and the drug addiction support they need, because they don't want to leave their pet.
That's the piece that's in Portland right now. They don't want those products.
But that's all they have, right?
That's all they have, and so they won't go to those shelters.
There are so many people. Domestic violence is one.
Yeah.
That's a big one. And I know Purina has a purple ribbon program that helps with that, but it's not big enough.
Our local YWCA does a wonderful job.
Oh, yeah.
Housing. We actually support them quite a bit when an animal moving in with their people to a YWCA facility needs regular vaccinations.
Yeah. And there's so many issues.
There's social service issues that don't have to handle.
Okay.
The other thing that's good. I welcome a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Oh. But I welcome a motion.
I thought you said, I make a motion to adjourn. Okay.
Okay.